I'm throwing my phone in the closest body of water. It's
gone. I was taking a bite of a meatball when I saw that, and I had to put it back on my plate. Like, I'm scarred.
Yeah. That's not good, man. That's really not good. Those jorts, I feel for jorts. If they have a soul, that's, they're just damaged goods. They're in a bad place for a long time.
I've got a nice little fire pit in my backyard. The jorts might have to enter them tonight.
Yeah, yes. I think that has to keep the fire going. Just a pair of jorts.
It is.
Forget Canada Day. They're not getting through this afternoon.
They've got three jorts. Hours of life left. That's it. It is not good.
May 21st, 2020, RIP. Here's Bob McKenzie, your TSN Hockey Insider. Have you ever started a fire with a pair of used jorts, Bob?
No, I haven't, but I'm in the middle of barbecuing here, and it looks like the burgers might be on fuego right now.
Okay. All right. Well, if you need help, O's in the kindling business now. He can help you out.
I'll tell you what, Bobby, my worst thing I do is, like, everyone says, like, close the barbecue for 10 minutes. I can't prevent the barbecue fire. Everything just lights on fire, and it's like...
Well, I'm having something... I usually am pretty good, but these burgers are a little juicier than normal, and as a result, I'm dealing with some flame issues right now, as we speak.
All right. So are you going to have eyebrows on the next Insider Trading, or what?
It should be okay. They look delicious.
Well, let's get to this 24-team playoff picture, which, again, I guess we've been kind of moving in this direction for a while, and it feels like they're pretty committed to that. I love it, Bob. Like we've been saying all afternoon, I love this idea. You get the top four seeds playing against each other. Maybe you reseed the top four. I really love that Montreal and Chicago are included because they're markets that deserve to be included. They're great hockey markets. I'm not sure I'd feel the same way if it was two southern markets, but I like it. You know, if this is what we end up with, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, I think the reactions are mixed. I think there are people who feel the way you do and say, hey, it's a made-for-TV event. You know, there's no fans in the stands, so if it's made for TV, then make it for TV and make sure that Chicago and the Rangers and the Canadians are all in it. And with a 24-team group, that's who's there. You know, the flip side argument is, and I hear this from a number of general managers, and we mentioned this, because basically what we're talking about is much of what we talked about on Tuesday night, not really a lot different than what we laid out on Tuesday night show. But the one that's stuck in the craw of a lot of people is the Montreal Canadiens at the pause had basically about a 1% chance of making the playoffs, or at least that's what those websites that track playoff percentages. So Montreal goes from having a 1% chance of making the playoffs based on 70 or 71 games played over the course of the NHL regular season. And now they come back to this 2014 format, and they suddenly are in a best of five with the Pittsburgh Penguins with a 30, 40, 50% chance of getting to the final 16. And some people think that that's the one that's hard to swallow. And it's somewhat similar, though not quite as pronounced, as the Chicago Blackhawks going up against the Edmonton Oilers in the first round. So I've heard it both ways. I've heard people say, it's a great made-for-TV event. What could be better? Getting teams like Chicago and Montreal in there, playing Pittsburgh and Edmonton. And then the flip side I've heard is, how are you going to feel the same way if, by chance, in a best of five after a month layoff, Chicago knocks off Connor McDavid's Edmonton Oilers and the Montreal Canadiens knock off Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and now the playoffs don't have any Crosby or any McDavid or any Pittsburgh or any Edmonton Oilers in a year where the Penguins were third place in their division and the Oilers were second place in their division. So did they distance themselves too much from the NHL regular season is the question some guys are asking.
Bobby, can you think of one like sticking point talking to different people in hockey where it's like a player's concern or anything between the owners and the players where it's like if they don't figure that one element out, this thing's not happening? Like, is there one or two things you might think that have to get sorted out between the players and the owners?
Depends who you talk to. I think, you know, the players, a lot of them will be wanting to know about family time, how locked down is it, what are the various rules and regulations, and you know, when do our families join us, do they join us, and that sort of thing. I think that would be one of the paramount ones. I know earlier we knew that the players were concerned about the idea of what we just talked about, and that is, you know, teams like Chicago and Montreal having an unfair advantage over a lot of the other teams over the course of the regular season, and they wanted to do more of a round-robin format, and the NHL didn't want to do that because they thought it might lead to too many meaningless games. You know, if Montreal goes into a round-robin format and loses its first game of the round-robin, it's probably in a position where it feels like, we're not going to do anything here, and suddenly games involving the Canadiens don't mean that much when you've got a best-of-five. You know, that's the NHL's attitude anyways. The players felt differently. We're going to know more after tonight. The Players Association has an executive committee and player rep call at 7 o'clock, and they're going to discuss what's on the table, as has been pretty much widely reported, and they'll decide to either endorse it or maybe throw a few tweaks and go back to the negotiating table. But there is a sense that, you know, or at least a chance, that sometime over the course of the next day or two or three, that the NHL and the PA will have some sort of agreement on the format. And once they do, the plan is for the NHL to fully announce that, although they won't announce the timeline as to when it might happen. They're holding that one off for a little bit because there's no need to start just yet.
Bob, you know, we were talking earlier with Ray. If it ends up being, you know, Vegas and Edmonton, any... Yeah. Guess concern about time change, like as far as it not having an Eastern hub, or just because all 24 teams are going to be out there, everyone's on the same page, and they'll adjust accordingly as far as TV times and everything like that.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, and you could take turns disadvantaging one hub versus the other with earlier games, I suppose. But you're right. You know, you guys, at least Noodles and oh, you guys played the game. You know how how us finely tuned athletes. And you know, it's important to us to keep a schedule. And you know, starting a game at, you know, 9 or 10 at night to hit prime time hours in the East isn't anybody's idea of necessarily fun, I wouldn't think. So, you know, is that a factor? I don't know. I do know, you know, hey, listen, the three Canadian cities are very eager, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Toronto. And I know Toronto is really eager to try and be one of these hubs, and they're hoping that they're going to be. And we'll see if that happens. But that would certainly satisfy if you think it's important to have one in the United States, one in Canada, one in the West, one in the East. You know, Toronto, Vegas would satisfy that. But I don't know how up the NHL on even having a Canadian hub necessarily, and whether or not it needs to be time zone sensitive and have one in the East. But that'll play itself out here. And as I say, the first step is getting the format done, and then things on timing and hubs will come after the fact.
With Bob McKenzie, your TSN Hockey Insider. We've been meaning to get to this courtesy of the NHL.com. NHL.com has been doing all these different lists and all the top 16, super 16 lists, and today they came out with their top 16 cup winners since 1967. And I don't think it would surprise anyone. The number one team was the 76-77 Montreal Canadiens, where they had a plus 216 goal differential that year, which is just disgusting when you think about it. And then it was the 84-85 Oilers, number two. Again, not a shock. But what stood out to me, Bob, and this isn't an exact science. I mean, it's just people voting, and ultimately, I guess it doesn't mean a lot. But to me, I read something into it. There's only two teams represented in the top 16 in the post-cap era, and they're both the Chicago Blackhawks, their first cup and their second cup, and only a third team from this century, and that's the 2001-2002 Detroit Red Wings, which you would expect. But I've always felt like with hockey, and I think you're the perfect guy to ask this as a hockey historian, like we're a slave to history, and in a way we just naturally think it was always better. Like, of course Gretzky's team was better. No one could possibly match Gordie Howe as the greatest power forward ever. No one could ever be better than Bobby Orr. Like, why do we do that? And it seems like we do that with teams as well. Like, you're telling me none of the Crosby teams could beat a team from the 80s or the 90s?
No, they could. There's no doubt in terms of the relative strength and the athletic prowess of modern-day athletes. But I think you're right. The Pittsburgh one would jump out at me as the omission, because what you've got otherwise is a tribute to dynasties. So, I mean, the Canadian dynasty of the 70s. You know, the Oiler dynasty of the 80s. You know, you've got, who was the other one you mentioned? Chicago,
the recent Chicago teams, clear, they're in, but they're like, you know, 13 and 15 on the list. Like, what about that Kings team, the second Kings team? Like, the first one they kind of backdoored in, then they went on a great run. But the second team, they were dominant all year. Yeah. They were a great, great team. You're telling me they're not one of the 16 best in 67? Like, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree, and I might have sprinkled the infield a little bit more without having to look at the list, just based on what you're telling me. But, you know, because you're right, the Kings were like a mini dynasty. The Penguins were, you know, a dynasty of sorts. You know, the definition of dynasty once the salary cap came completely changed, and the Hawks kind of redefined it. I think they had 3 cups in 6 years or something along those lines.
Right.
In the old days, the dynasty was you had to win like 3 in a row. But, you know, the Detroit Red Wings were, you know, you mentioned the Wings, and they were, in a manner of speaking, a dynasty, but not as, you know, not as clearly, quite as clearly defined as the Islanders, the Oilers, and the Habs.
Yeah, it just, yeah. I don't know if it's helping the game that we all do it. I'm guilty of it too, and I'm of the younger generation. You'd think I would be pushing more for younger teams or more modern teams, but we're just always like, well, there's no one that could be like that. Well, why not? Like, why can't McDavid in 15 years be considered the greatest player ever? He just can't be because he's not Mario or Gretzky. Well, why not?
Right.
Like,
yeah, and part of it is the level of domination. And if he's got it, he's got it. But it's harder to dominate now, so it becomes more difficult. You know, this dynasty question, I think you should get right on the phone to the quizmaster as soon as we're done here.
No, thanks.
And say that you need to audit NHL.com and their top Stanley Cup champions since 67. And the quizmaster will come up with his unique formula to take issue with that. And maybe he'll satisfy some of your desire for more recent times. Although, I suspect.
I don't think so, man.
I suspect he's such an old timer, you know.
Yeah, he'd be like, actually, let's make it the last 100 years, and the greatest team ever would be the 24-25, like Ottawa Senators
and,
or something.
And you know, he has a soft spot for the Canadiens.
Yes,
is he a Canadiens fan? Like, or he just is that era?
Not now, but you know, he grew up in Châteauguay, and I think he's predisposed to all things Montreal from that era, no doubt about it. And like Jean Béliveau is, that's his guy.
Well, that's the thing. Like you, I remember having a conversation with him, and he's a mild-mannered person. He's certainly not a physical guy or anything. And I swear to God, he was going to punch me in the face when I said something like I said something as a joke about, like, you know, those Canadians. I didn't even know if it was like Béliveau or something like that.
Yeah.
And he turned from mild mannered to the point where, like, I almost felt like he took a karate chop stance at me, like, was like, I'm going to punch this guy in the face and throw him out of my office, because, you know, I was bringing up kind of a point like Brian was talking about, like, why can't a modern day player be good, you know, as good as those players you're talking about, Béliveau and all that. And he, man, was he fired up about it. Like,
I get it. Like, if that was, you know, what you were into or what you watched and who your idol was and everything. But I don't think it's healthy for the sport. And I'm being serious when I say that. Like, in football, no one's like, hey, Tom Brady can't compete with Otto Graham. It's like, yeah, he can. He's better. Like, Brady's the greatest. And LeBron is number one or number two. And meanwhile, like Crosby, like, how dare you say he's even in the same stratosphere as Gretzky. Some people would say, like, I saw one recently had Messier ahead of him. Messier is a top 10 player all the time. I'm taking Sid. If I'm going to a game tonight, I'm taking Sid. and I don't think that's outrageous.
No, I don't think so either. But there, you know, that was highly debatable because there are lots of people who would take Sidden, or lots of people who would take Mess.
Yeah.
Completely different players. Although the definition of a power game has changed, because Sid doesn't put the point end of his blade in a guy's mouth and have him. Well, that actually was from a Canada Cup. I want to say the guy's name was Colvin, K-O-V-I-N, from the Rush Soviets, and in a Canada Cup. Mess kind of went at him, and I think. Well, maybe it was, I'm trying to remember, it might have been Richie Sutter. I can't remember, but the exact precise details of it. But Messier went to check somebody, and he led with the blade of a stick, and it went in the roof, Colvin was the elbow. I think Richie Sutter might have been the guy who took the stick blade in the mouth. Mess led with that, and then followed through with a humongous hit as well. But the story goes that the player, whoever it was, and if it wasn't Rich Sutter, I apologize, but they were picking black hockey tape off the roofs of their mouth for quite some time.
Yeah, that would hurt, man. I saw a clip of him. I think it was their first cup against the Islanders. I think it was being played recently, and like first shift, it was Trotsky too. He like just blatant elbow to Trotsky's head, like just to set the tone. Big game tonight, and he was something else. But anyway, we'll delve into this more. As we move forward, we'll do this again soon. Get back to the barbecue, Bob. Good luck with that, and have a great weekend, buddy.
It looks like it's going to be okay. We salvaged it. Oh, we didn't burn a shoe or anything else.
Attaboy. Good job, buddy.
All right, Bob. All right, have a good one, boys.
We'll talk to you. There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. We'll get back into that discussion tomorrow. I've been meaning to bring it up, and Bob was the right guy to ask, I think, from a historical standpoint, but. It's true. Like John Béliveau, I didn't get to see Béliveau play, and I'm not here to disparage the reputation of John Béliveau. He's obviously an all-time great, but you're telling me no one can be better than him ever? Like, how ridiculous is that? Like, honestly, how ridiculous is it to suggest no one can be better than someone that played in the 50s and 60s? Yeah. It shouldn't be the case, and I hope it isn't the case. We better hope better players come along. I hope I get to see in some point in my lifetime someone that was challenges Bobby Orr as the greatest defenseman ever, or is better.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, why not?
What it's become is, I don't know if this is the right word, it's like sacrilegious to like say anything
it's
like
exactly
that.
There's some people that think Nick Listerum was like better than Bobby Orr. It's like there's people that think that.
See, I'm always like, I love Nick Listerum. I think Scotty Niedermayer was the best, personally. Like to me, hockey was too easy for him. He retired. He could have played five more years, but he was I've won everything. What do I need to
But those are legitimate arguments. You can say, is it Lidstrom? Right. Is it Niedermeyer? Is it Pronger? But then, if you bring in Bobby Orr, it's like, hey, don't be stupid, idiot. Like,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the same thing with Gretzky and Gordie Howe. Like Gordie Howe, no one could be a better power forward ever. Like Lindros in his prime. Nope. Don't even start. Like really. Yeah.
Non-starter.
Okay, I guess maybe like it's sacrilegious. It's the perfect word. How dare you disparage the name of the players who have been? It's just been determined they're the greatest ever, and you're fighting for every other position. And I think it's the same thing with teams, or it feels that way.